Eric Zorn's on the line right now. He's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter. He'll mail to you for free if you like. Just email ericzorn@gmail.com. For a pittance, you get the premium version of the Picayune Sentinel, the weekly newsletter. Eric is a member of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. I thought we had a pretty good session last week talking about, of all things, we fell into a long conversation about DEI, and I thought the gang was firing on all cylinders, but in different directions. Didn't you agree?
It was a wonderful show. And of course, this week, the news just keeps offering up more and more material. I think we should maybe go to a daily schedule with the Missing Rascals.
Hey, Eric, no. You know, one of the things, though, I think the Rascals should talk about this week, and this is tangential, but I mean, we could talk about Donald Trump forever. But why does J.B. Pritzker keep taking the bait? I don't think the video he put out last week where he's going to rename Lake Michigan Lake Illinois was all that funny, and it was a satire of Donald Trump's ambitions to rename things whatever, but except that he's just posturing nationally. He doesn't do any local Chicago media. He will be happy to be on Face the Nation or Meet the Press. And then he puts out a not real funny video because he's got to flick Donald Trump's ear. That's his favorite thing to do. And I'm not impressed. What's your thought about that?
Well, I think that he is trying to position himself for a run for president in, 3 years now, right? And my thought is, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, but I think that if you start to see him losing weight, like, you know, being on Ozempic or something like that, that's going to be a sure sign that he's campaigning, that I think that voters will hold it against him, hold his size against him. And you saw that, remember, with Jesse Jackson Jr., who was a sort of stout young man back long ago, and everyone was talking about him running for mayor, and suddenly he came back all trim and slim, and it looked like he was running for mayor. And I think that's kind of a thing that politicians do. I would keep your eye on Governor Pritzker's waistline, and if he shrinks some, then I think he's going to be running for president. Because that's certainly what all these things look like to me, which is he's trying to build a national audience and get a kind of reputation. So those early primaries, he's going to be up there. He doesn't tend to be mentioned in the first sentence of people who are talking about who's going to run for president in 3 years for Democrats. He doesn't seem to be at the top of that list. But if you're out there and you're giving speeches and you're making an impression, maybe that's what he's up to.
Although his politics nationally are so progressive that I wonder if the Democratic Party wants that. They may want somebody who's a little more moderate, and maybe they don't need a blue state.
Yeah, I think that could be true. He's not, super progressive. He's not a member of the squad or anything. I think he's a fairly pragmatic Democrat as far as that goes.
Well, I'm thinking about sanctuary status and the fact that every time Trump says something, he has to rebut it. And that will position him as, if not progressive, at least reactionary. And Donald Trump's Q scores are going up right now.
Are his poll numbers going up?
Yeah, I saw that his favorables were higher than they were. They're not 50%, but you would think, given what's happened in the last 3 weeks, it would be reasonable to expect a downtick. And he's been ticking up.
Well, you think so? I guess some of the interviews that I've seen with Trump supporters is that they're glad that he's doing stuff, that he is really, taking charge, taking a lot of action. And there is a sense that a lot of people who preceded him are very slow and cautious in what they do. And they don't agree with everything that he's done, but they like the idea that he's doing stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of ways he is fulfilling the promises that he made on the campaign trail, whether you like him or not. And then they'll throw in something like, getting rid of the penny, which I think a lot of people like that idea, or some of the other ideas that he has. I mean, the basic idea of rooting out government waste is not a bad one, right? I mean, politicians say they're going to do that, and then they never do. And he's actually going in there and trying to do something. And unfortunately, the way he's going about it, with a sledgehammer rather than, going out with surgical scissors or something, is dismaying. But people are feeling like he's a man of action, and that's what they want. So
it is a bully pulpit. I mean, you and I say that to suggest that it's resonating. States, cities, companies are all looking inward to see maybe we should follow suit. And frankly, we all should. But like you said, maybe not with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the USAID program, just for instance, and you can look at that program and find some expenditures that are dubious at best, some things that organization has done, that agency has done, that are arguably sort of beyond the purview of what people expect out of foreign aid. But a lot of things they do are really good and really important, and they save lives around the world. And the idea of going in and just like pulling the plug on the whole thing, it seems cruel and thoughtless and rash. But on the other hand, the idea of getting rid of some of the things that maybe government shouldn't be funding is not a bad one. So I think people are hopefully taking a wait-and-see attitude and seeing whether some of those programs will be restored at the end of the day.
The United States provides food to people around the world, aid, medicine, a whole host of services through USAID. The amount of food that is sitting in docks and ports right now, $500 million, is wasting away because the staff to retrieve it and distribute it has been sent home or told not to do so. $500 million of food purchased, by the way, from American farmers, shipped, is sitting there spoiling unless they figure out how to get that to people without the staff to do so. So if you want to cut costs, go ahead and do so. But if you gave people so much as 30 days notice, they could have at least unloaded that food and then not put more food on ships to go over and spoil. That's not efficient.
Yeah, I mean, the irony is that people are going to die because of this, and that the richest man in the world is the one who is driving.
Okay.
And again, I think you and I can agree that the government has wasteful spending in it, and that spending needs to be cut, but you don't have to cut everything. You know, I mean, it's a classic baby bathwater situation.
Yeah, I've heard it described as the baby and the bathroom is the way they're treating USAID. And that one just does feel like punching down. You know, if they eliminated its budget entirely, no one would benefit in the United States. Cost of eggs wouldn't go down. Nobody would get a tax rebate. It's minuscule. So it just seems so unnecessary. If you guys really have some balls, go ahead and cut defense or Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid. That's where all the money's going. Let's see a cut there. Oh, you don't want to do that. Of course you don't want to do that. This, though, doesn't do anything except it's a win. Hey, we renamed the Gulf of Mexico, and we are going to eliminate the penny. And by the way, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should. I don't care. Do whatever you want. But you just get to chalk up wins that aren't of great consequence. And this one, USAID, is definitely punching down.
Well, I totally agree with that. And again, I mean, and you talk about the amount of money saved, and I think we should get rid of the penny, but the amount of money that will save every year is, you know, somewhere around $86 million.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Various estimates I've seen out there, but it's a very, very small amount of money. I mean, it's maybe, you know, a lot to you and me, but it's not to the federal budget. And so there's, you know, when you're talking about money in that term, and also, you know, foreign aid is only about 1% of the budget, and people think it's much more than that. So it's what they call an exercise of soft power right around the world, where you're showing that America is a generous country, a helpful country that cares about you. And if you abandon them, they're going to be vulnerable to being seduced by other countries that are maybe not as friendly to the United States. So I think it's a huge mistake to cut those programs.
Well, I heard one USAID worker say that the other country that is in these countries is China. And to some degree, Russia. If we leave there, who will be the favorite nation? It'll be our adversaries. The amount of money we spend and the political capital we gain, well, that was Kennedy's idea, makes it, if you ask me, a pretty good investment.
You would think so, right? And this is why it's so dismaying to see this money cut so rashly. I'll say it again. I think that there is some surgery that needs to be done. I don't think we need to kill the patient.
So you are a fan of getting rid of the penny. You know what that means, though? And we should get rid of the penny because it's just an exercise in futility. We mint millions of these coins so that they can be handed out to people and change. Those people never spend that money back. It never goes back into currency, but you've got to get your change. So we have to keep giving pennies to merchants. 18% of all purchases are still cash transactions. So we got to have pennies to even the score at the point of purchase. And that money just goes into jars. So it's just this unending flow one way, and we lose money on every penny minted. Fine. Now we're going to make it the nickel. You know how much it costs to make a nickel?
I do. It's almost 14 cents.
Okay. So now we're going to be handing out nickels. And by the way, that thing that costs $3.67 is now either going to cost $3.65 and the merchant takes a hit, or it's going to cost, they'll round it up 3 cents and you're going to take the hit. But I don't think that's a big deal. But the nickel costs more money to make than the penny.
Yeah, well, it costs more to make than the penny, but it's not, as a percentage, it's not as great. I mean, a penny now costs 3.69 cents to make, so it's like more than three times the value of the penny, almost four times the value of a penny to make it. And a nickel to make it is only, what, about three times the value of a nickel. But yeah, both coins probably should be phased out, and cash transactions rounded up. There's the other costs of this is there are environmental costs in the mining of the zinc that goes into making the penny. Make 3.2 billion pennies a year, something like that. I mean, the environmental cost of mining those, of transporting the metal to the mint, of transporting the pennies to the stores, and then the stores having to take the pennies to the bank. I mean, there's lots of environmental costs that go into that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just think that, and we're going to an increasingly cashless society. You said 18% of transactions now are, I'll bet that number is dropping slightly every year now. You can just touch your phone to that thing. I mean, I barely carry cash anymore. I never carry change anymore. I just touch my phone to the reader, and that's how I make my transactions. I don't think this idea of rounding up cash transactions or rounding them down has proven to be inflationary. I mean, you look at the experience in a lot of other countries that have gotten rid of their smallest denominational coins, and there's no inflation effect if you're rounding up or down. Because, you know, you talk about, oh, what if they price something at 368, so it'll round up to 370. Well, somebody buys two things, then that may round down. It's insignificant. It's an insignificant amount of money.
I get that. But here's what I think is a roadblock, that the zinc slugs are made in Tennessee, which is a red state. And the amount of money that company makes, it's the minting of those slugs is contracted outside the U.S. government. The U.S. Mint doesn't make them. And it's a company in Tennessee, and they make $1 billion I forget how many years. But, I mean, it's this huge industry that the legislatures, the congressional representatives, I don't know exactly who's going to, you know, be deciders on this, but it will not be favorably received in that state.
Well, maybe not, but it does have to be an act of Congress. One of the things that's been bandied about in the last couple of days is, you know, Trump tweeted this out during the Super Bowl.
Posted it on his
people were saying he doesn't actually, according to the Constitution, he does not have that authority.
No,
that the Constitution says that the Congress is the one that handles the price of
who?
U.S. Congress.
Never heard of him. Talking with Eric Zorn, the publisher of a weekly newsletter here in Chicago called The Picayune Sentinel. He'll send it to you for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com. Last March, a white SUV was driving down the road. A young man named Dexter Reed was behind the wheel. A vehicle of police officers went by it, and then they pulled the vehicle over. When they asked him to roll down his window, he did, but then he started to roll it back up halfway. They said, open the door. They wanted him to get out. He didn't. Bullets came from outside the vehicle, and then the police fired a barrage of bullets onto the car and Dexter Reed. Four officers fired 96 shots in 41 seconds. He was shot 13 times. He fired first, it seems almost certain. Now the city council is poised to give his family, Dexter Reed's, $1.25 million in a settlement, but they couldn't, no pun intended, now pull the trigger yesterday. Eric, what's your thought about that story?
Well, I wrote about it quite a bit back when it happened nearly a year ago, and I had a lot of questions about why the police pulled him over. Now, in your summary, you said that they passed him by or they saw him. The videos that I saw, and I looked at all the videos that were posted online from the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, and it looked like they saw him at quite a distance. And then the first story that came out was that they had seen that he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, which was not plausible the way I look at those videos. And then the story said, well, maybe it was tinted windows. The windows were tinted too heavily. And I don't know if that's the case either. I think there's general agreement that this was what they call a pretextual stop, where they pull over, you know, often young black men to search their car for drugs and guns. And so, you know, the question is, well, was the stop legal? Well, it probably was legal because there was probably some violation that he made with the tinted windows or the seatbelt or whatever.
Do we know that? But we don't know that, do we?
We don't. Well, here's the thing. We don't know a lot about this story because it's been sort of hidden underneath layers of investigation. I would love to see it go to trial. It does seem to me that someone who fires first at a police officer, he's pulled over, he's got five cops around his car. The answer is not to try to shoot your way out of that situation. And he paid the ultimate price for doing that. It was a really bad idea. But it seems to me from what I know that you can't reward someone who thinks, well, this wasn't a good traffic stop, I'm going to open fire on the police. So I'm sympathetic to the idea that city council yesterday held up this settlement and they're going to talk about it some more. The argument for settling it is pretty much that you could end up with a jury very sympathetic to the Reed family, and $1.25 million, again, sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but it's not that much for these settlements. I mean, they're paying $15, $20 million to families of survivors, victims, when police misconduct. So this is a pittance when it comes to, and even defending the case is probably going to cost them more than that. I think it's probably the smart fiscal thing to do, because even taking this to trial with all the outside lawyers is going to cost them a lot of money. But I think the public needs to know and ought to know, and this ought to be subject to a trial as to what happened here, what the police did. Was this reasonable? They fired 96 shots at the guy. And again, he fired first. And I don't think that you can necessarily reward somebody for firing first at police. But there's a lot of questions about this case and what it should mean going forward. And I would like to see it go to trial myself.
Hmm. You know, the idea that $1.25 million may not be justified, but it's less expensive and painful than a trial or what maybe a jury would return sounds a little bit like television network, CBS, Paramount, paying Donald Trump or his foundation a lot of money just to get the thing over with rather than suffering the bad publicity or who knows what harm. You've got maybe the sale of a TV network from one company to another, and that can get held up. Well, let's just pay the president's foundation the money we need, and that will sort of grease the skids. That sort of thing happens all the time. But in this case, it seems to me like you've got two separate events. I'm willing to believe that the stop was not justified, and maybe the police officers should be disciplined for that. I don't know what that looks like. That's one thing. But if it's certain that Dexter Reed fired on the police first, they are within their rights to fire back.
Absolutely. That would be how I would see it. And that's the – I mean, I'm not – certain that he fired first. That's all the reports that I've seen suggest that he was. And I don't, I mean, I know that police can get hot headed and overreact, but I don't think that they would just open fire on a motorist who's sitting in his car. There was a provocative act that preceded that. I would like to see it go to trial. And I think that, you know, when you're always giving in to these suits and always giving in to things that you end up sending the message that this is a good use of people's time to sue the police over things like that. And I think that the city does need to show that it will fight back on cases like this.
How do we not know what happened? This was March. You've looked at the video. I watched it again today. It's heart-wrenching if nothing else, from the police perspective, the body cam. This is traumatic, and the police made mistakes, but they were being fired upon. It's a horrible scene. How do we not know what happened? Why was the car stopped? What were the violations? Who fired first? When should they have stopped firing? Those are very answerable questions.
They are, and I like to say that there are a number of cases like this that are old. The Adam Toledo shooting is still shrouded in mystery. They haven't had hearings. They haven't had disciplinary hearings. We don't know exactly what happened there. We don't know what the resolution of that case is.
Yeah.
And that was like 3 years ago, more than 3 years ago, I think.
All right.
So it's like, I don't know why that takes so long. And I think, you know, you and I should be pounding our shoes on the table.
Well, we're going to do that tomorrow when we record the Mincing Rascals. We'll drop another podcast and discuss these and other issues with a smart panel of folks who care about Chicago. Nice to talk to you today, Eric.
Good talking to you, John. Thank you.
That's Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel.